Okay, let's get down to it, boppers.
It's on. We're at episode 8.
This is episode 8 of the Cuddle Buddies.
This is Cuddling Afterwards, where we watch a film and then discuss it immediately afterwards. Cuddling Afterwards with us, the Cuddle Buddies.
Cuddling After with the Cuddle Buddies. Or in an alternate universe, we're watching bad movies and we are the Flim Flam film fans.
That's even better.
No.
That might be an alternate. Film fans?
Film fan as I spit all over my laptop screen.
I got to come up with a... I put a trial balloon out for former writers of Nerd Mentality to see if anyone would be interested in doing a movie.
Ooh,
website.
A call to assemble?
Yes, it was a news team assemble.
Fuck yeah!
Conch shell, and we got three on board. So I think we're gonna do it.
Whoa.
We need a name for it though.
For the what is it now? A production company? Are we going big?
We're going way small. No, it's just a movie review site.
Are we a limited liability corporation still? Yeah. I really wanted to start an LLC.
We can do an LLC where we just limit our liability throughout life generally.
It's very easy to start an LLC.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, I'm in an LLC. I can't really be responsible for this vehicular manslaughter.
I really like the idea of someone starting an LLC and having no idea what it means to be limitedly liable and
that
just assuming
like
they can
that,
do whatever they want.
Yeah, it sounds like a Kramerica venture. Kramerica like, Industries.
But Jerry, the liability is limited. It's not limitless. That's what Jerry would say.
You don't even know what an LLC is, do you? No, do you?
It's not unlimited. It's still limited.
But they do, and they're the ones that limit the liability. I wanted to do a movie script about people who start an LLC that limits their liability for murder.
Did you really, or are you just riffing right now?
I'm riffing? No, I'm not that good at riffing. No, they would, basically every one of them would take a small part in the murder, but they would be limited in how much they knew about the rest of it. And so there'd be kind of like the bureaucracy that you put into, like, corporate malfeasance, but into murder, and the murder would be of corporate executives of other companies.
Hmm, I like this.
Yeah, one of those feel-good murder movies.
Yeah, just killing bankers. Everyone hates bankers.
Yeah.
It is funny. I feel like bankers are the new lawyers in movies. And so far that you can blame them for all your problems, and they represent the devil.
Yeah, like if they remade Jurassic Park, they would like bring a banker along to see how much money, like loans or whatever they'd get, and the banker would be like, yeah, we can make so much fucking money off this. And then he'd get eaten by the T-Rex. Spoiler alert.
Exactly. Over, yes, continually for 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, that'd really, really expand it.
I was thinking about it because I was listening to a pod talking about the Devil's Advocate and how that's
oh,
like...
Oh, yeah.
That's like peak lawyer hate, right? Because they're literally the devil.
Yeah.
So you should remake that movie, but have them all be bankers.
They should make a movie called The Bevel's Advocate, and it's a guy who does, like, signs, and he's a really big advocate for adding bevel.
I don't even know what bevel is.
It's like when you do, like, the rounding on the edge of a character.
Hmm. You should make him, a really fat actor.
Why?
For that real subtle joke of the rounding of the character.
I don't know if anyone... And he should be a really well-rounded character, too.
Or maybe it should, another character should be, Kearning Reeves. Kearning Reeves? No, that's bad. That
no, some
bad.
Good font-based, movie thrillers.
Yeah, we need more of that. We need that subgenre to expand.
Yeah, that'd be good.
So what do you want to talk about?
Well, we got two films. What have you been watching? You said you wanted to really rant about Ghost Ship. You hated that film, Ghost Ship?
No, it was Ghost, starring Patrick Swayze. No, it wasn't. It was Ghost World.
Ghost World. Man, where everyone is a ghostwriter. They all have Nick Cage flaming skull heads.
Ghost. Have they made a movie, Ghost Writer, like writing with your pencil?
They had...
That's a good idea. He's actually a ghost.
Yeah, they had it. They had this exact concept. It was a TV show, and it was on like PBS, I think. And I think these kids solved mysteries along with a ghost who he could only write by taking... Like, he'd go up to a sign, and he'd take the letters that were on the sign, and then he would, like, rearrange them to make a message.
I feel like I remember this show.
Yeah, it reminds me of, like, the Wishbone era, the fucking PBS heyday.
Oh, it was a PBS show?
I think it was. It had that stink.
That's weird. Yeah, right as you said it, I think my mind went into that Wishbone level of quality television that I watched as a child.
High quality, you mean?
Yeah.
We're yet fucking to find dogs higher. And ghosts are helping kids learn how to read.
Because, goddamn, the teachers won't help.
Yeah. That's for damn sure, am I right?
Am I right in the public school?
Back in the Clinton years? Whatever the hell those shows were on?
So, Ghost World.
Yeah, now that we've gotten past our obligatory 10 minutes of riffing on the title of the film.
Yeah, I'm really trying to keep it tighter here because I'm like a dog with a bone. It's like the second you make a riff, or I even make my own riff, I just chase it until it's gone.
Yeah, I think that's the wrong phrase. A dog sticks on the bone. A dog won't be distracted from the bone. So you're like a dog with in a park where someone's pretending to throw a tennis ball, but they're not really.
So wait, so I'm the dog chasing the imaginary tennis ball?
Yeah, isn't that the point you're trying to make? Were you the bone in the dog and bone scenario?
Maybe I'm a dog chasing an automobile. I'm chasing something that I cannot catch, which is a funny joke.
Your own thoughts.
Yeah, my own thoughts and my own humor.
This would be a really good time for me to have a soundboard, because then I could have Heath Ledger's Joker be like, I'm like a dog chasing cars, or, you know, whatever he says.
That's what I was thinking. I didn't know the full quote, though, and I didn't want to try and do the voice like you just did.
Yeah, because it sounds like the Joker doing an impression of Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, that'd be good. Ghost World, though.
So now that we've gotten our second riffing on the title, riffing on the fact that we riffed on the title. All right, Ghost World.
Ghost World, not as good as any Jimmy Stewart movie. That's my review. Boom. Lock it in.
That's a wide margin. I don't even remember this. How old is this? I can't even think of what it is.
2001. I can't tell you if it's post or pre 9/11, but I'm guessing pre 9/11.
Okay. Well, if it was in 2001, then it probably was at least shot in pre 9/11.
Oh, totes. Totally, okay. That's true. I forgot movies don't come out the day that they are filmed.
Those people aren't experiencing everything that happens in them. Okay, so was it about ghosts? Was it like Ghost Ship?
So you haven't seen it? Is that what you said?
No, I don't think I've ever even heard of this film. I'm picturing a ghost.
There's not really any ghosts involved.
Well, I googled it, and it looks like there's two girls that would have been played by Parker Posey if this movie had been made a decade earlier, and one of them is cutie baby Scarlett Johansson.
One of them is ScarJo. The other one is Thora Birch.
Oh, from American Booty.
Yeah, she grew up to be American Booty. I don't know.
So what the hell is this film about? It looks like some fucking indie. A precursor to like the indie boom.
Pretty indie, pretty much like a Gen X. The character Thora Birch plays is like a Gen X wet dream, is how I described her to myself.
In 2001, that's good timing.
2001, yeah.
Is she like a manic pixie dream girl or something for the X generation?
Exactly.
The MTV generation?
Yeah. So my introductions to this movie were, one, several years ago, I had a really horrible physics teacher in college, and all I remember about him is that he sucked, he made bad jokes, and he really liked this movie, Ghost World.
And?
Sorry, I had to take a sip of beer there. Second, my wife said she enjoyed the movie when she was younger, and it's highly rated. So I was looking on Netflix, it's rated high.
There you go.
Okay, I'm going to get into it. And the whole time I was like, am I missing something here? I'm missing something, aren't I? Is this movie
How long did you give it before you were like, this fucking blows?
Well, it was one of those nights where we didn't know what to watch, so I had already started and stopped like three other movies because I weren't feeling them. So about maybe 10 minutes in, I was pretty much off board.
Well, that's what they say, that you got to grab them within 10 minutes or else it's all off board. That's what they say. Everyone uses that phrase.
Yeah, we were on board, and then 10 minutes in, I was off board. Kind of not paying too much attention beyond that, but I will say, yeah, I don't know, it's just one of those movies where, like, nothing happens, and it's just about... I'll tell you what it's about. Okay, two girls, they're best friends, post-high school graduation, trying to figure out what they're doing in that time span. So
a Bildungs Roma.
What the fuck are you saying to me?
Isn't it with the phrase for a coming of age story?
What is it again?
It's spelled like time. Bildungs Roman.
Bilbo's. Yeah.
You know, I broke a rule. I always say that I don't use French or Latin phrases when doing movie reviews because that's pretentious. But to my credit, I don't know how to pronounce it, so it's still real.
Yeah, you still keep that cred because you're an idiot.
fucking moron, yeah.
Yeah. So they're trying to figure out their life. They're two best friends. Not going to college. Just trying to get an apartment together and, like, just kind of rebel. They're both kind of very rebellious. You know, just not really getting it. It opens up with their graduation. And the valedictorian's giving kind of a smarmy speech, and they're both just, you know, looking at each other, rolling their eyes, because they're better than everyone, I guess.
Like, oh, everyone, yeah, I love
all
that.
All the Gen Xers. Yeah. And so, as they're trying to figure it out, ScarJo goes the route of getting a job and trying to be responsible, and she's kind of like the one that's maturing.
There you go.
And Thora Birch... is like trying to continue to rebel, not really taking anything seriously. She, you know, gets a job, but she kind of just fucks around and makes jokes and then gets fired because people like that don't survive in this world.
Well, that's good. Good to know.
Her character really reminded me of the prototype for Juno character. Did you see Juno?
No, but isn't that where Totes My Goats comes from? Or did they at least use that in that movie?
No, Totes My Goats came from I Love You, Man, I think. Paul Rudd said it.
Oh, did it? I was trying to draw a thematic line between the movies when I used that phrase, but I haven't seen Juno, so I guess that's why I failed. I have seen I Love You, Man, though.
Yeah, Love You, Man's good. Juno sucks.
And that was a good movie.
Yeah, it was good. Juno sucks mostly because... the lead character is, like, obnoxious, pretentious, thinks she's, like, way more mature than she actually is, and better than everyone.
Unlike I Love You, Man, where they do the exact opposite. They're, like, 40-year-old guys acting like 14-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. And those movies are fun.
Fucking love that Jason Segel. Much better than Steven Segel.
Yeah, I can't believe they're brothers.
It's kind of weird, but they both have that large frame.
And they're twin brothers.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about how good Twins the movie was, as I commonly do throughout my day. I think just stop and reflect on how great a film that was.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's weird that Arnold Schwarzenegger's film career had so many movies that were kind of almost like meta commentaries on Arnold Schwarzenegger, the bodybuilder / superstar actor, because it was like you kind of had to cast Arnold Schwarzenegger in the pitch for the movie. Like Twins makes no sense if you don't, in the script, write Danny DeVito's one of them and Arnold Schwarzenegger's the other one. Otherwise, it makes no sense. You couldn't do that movie with, like, you know, hey, it's Lou Ferrigno and Matthew Broderick or something. It, you know, it had to be those two guys.
Well, it could be Lou Ferrigno and Danny DeVito. I think Danny DeVito was the linchpin of that movie.
Yeah, well, okay, it so you, absolutely had to be Danny DeVito. That's clear.
You can't replace him.
But Arnold was definitely the guy who you would cast opposite him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, guys like Dolph Lundgren or Lou Ferrigno, they just didn't quite have Arnold's charm. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, then, you know, Arnold also had Predator, which was... actually, that movie was initially pitched as... someone was making a joke, because back then, the idea that Rocky had, like, so many sequels was, like, just a common joke, like in Spaceballs. And they were like, oh, the next person he's got to fight. Who else is there left to fight? Oh, he's going to fight E.T. next. And so... that became Arnold versus an alien. But still, it's kind of the concept of the movie is, what if an alien came after our biggest beefcakes? And of course, Arnold is our biggest beefcake.
Yeah, no one beefier than him. I mean, Carl Weathers, at the time, really held his own.
I mean, body mass alone, you've got...
pure body mass. Yeah, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was Arnold Schwarzenegger in every movie. And they made sure that made sense, except for Jingle All the Way, where it made no sense.
Yeah, Jingle All the Way made no sense. I think that one of the best uses of it is in Total Recall, because the movie very heavily hints that it's all an illusion.
I never saw it.
Well, it's one of those movies where you're like, you know, it's like Inception. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy's going into a real world, but is it real or is it not? But throughout it all, it's just like, there's no fucking way that Arnold Schwarzenegger is just a, you know, blue-collar schlub.
Right.
It's like is he really a secret agent, or is he imagining it? It's like, well, look how fucking stacked he is. What is this guy doing married to Sharon Stone, and it's not a setup? He's not a secret... Anyway.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of like True Lies, too. It's like, how is this guy just a... It's supposed to be like an accountant in that movie or something?
Yeah, but he is a secret agent in that movie. It's like, established.
Well, I know, but...
How does anyone else? Yeah, it's like Clark Kent, you know.
Right. Why hasn't Arnold Schwarzenegger played Superman? That'd be great.
Because he's not American enough, is why. Because a guy from another planet who looks exactly like a white man, for some reason, we accept that. And he also has to be American.
Well, that'd be so much better then, because Arnold's got that, like, you know, super thick accent he can't ever get rid of. Then it would kind of... it would make more sense as an alien trying to learn English, because that's kind of what Arnold sounds like.
Yeah, but he was born on Earth, or he was, you know, a child on Earth, so he learned English naturally.
Yeah, but then he could always be like, oh, he's kind of an alien still.
He would have been good if they'd done... Austrian accent. Yeah, if they had done an adaptation of Red Sun, the one where it's one of those what-if stories that if instead of landing in Kansas, he landed in, like, 1950s Soviet Union...
Yeah.
That's a good comic. Anyway, wait a second. You told me you had a big rant about Ghost World, you said. You had a lot of bones to pick, and yet all you've said is that it's kind of a boring movie.
Yeah, I'm picking my bones here, but we're getting lost on our trademark tangents.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no one's going to complain. We have a lot of people write in about different complaints about the show. No one's ever complained about the tangents.
Yeah, and mostly just
your
voice.
I'll bet my badge on that one.
Your voice and your stupid phrases. I bet my badge. I mean, my big beef with the movie...
yeah, bring out that big beef, or patented big beefs.
Yeah, bring out my Mastiff, my Heath Mastiff.
So it just fucking sucks?
I mean, it's one of those movies, like, you have to be in an exact mindset. And that mindset is... a girl who's graduated college in the year 2001 and doesn't want to go to, or sorry, graduate high school, doesn't want to go to college and wants to rebel against her small town. So it's like, what? Nothing really happens in the movie. She befriends an older gentleman similar to Juno.
Oh, well, they'll spoil all these films I haven't seen. I thought she bangs a... I don't give a shit. Go ahead.
Ghost World, yeah, I'm just going to spoil all of it now, because yeah. I don't recommend watching it. So, Thora Birch is just kind of dicking around, and it's just annoying to watch because all the characters in the movie, in real life, she's the asshole and she's the one that's like, you know, taking a piss out of life and not being a functioning member of society.
But she's being a real Holden Caulfield about things.
Yeah, and the movie is like catering to her, so like
it's on her side.
Yeah, so at one point she's, you know, just gets a job at a movie theater and she's like training with who's that actor? He's some I can't remember, some kind of like jockish kind of guy, and everyone that comes up, all the customers, she like makes fun of them in one way or another. Like some lady gets popcorn and like asks for extra butter, and she makes a joke about how it's like disgusting oil and like calling her kind of a fat pig.
She's just bebopping and scatting on everybody.
Everybody, and then the manager guy appropriately is like, "What the hell are you doing? Like, don't be a dick." And she's like, "Oh, I'm just making jokes. Like, don't take too seriously." And it's just that kind of character really just frustrates me because mostly. I mean, I looked it up. Ghost World, I guess we should go back, is based on a comic.
Okay. So is it like Scott Pilgrim-esque, where it's like extremely up its own ass?
Yeah, I mean, not to that degree, but the characterization of Thora Birch, the main character, is very much like all in... It's as if it's her world, you know?
Her
did you watch
world?
Ah, damn it. Did you watch 30 Rock?
I watched some 30 Rock, but not as... Like, you've watched all of them. I've watched some of them. I also, side note, have tried to watch Kimmy Schmidt lately, but I don't think it's that funny.
Here we go on the tangents.
Right, we'll they're doing it again, guys!
Put a note on that, Kimmy Schmidt. We can come back to
that. Put a pin on that one, yeah. I'll put a note on it.
Put a bird on it. Car. So the great thing in one of the later episodes of 30 Rock, they revisit Tina Fey in like high school. She goes to a high school reunion, and she in her head was like the nerdy person that everyone was picking on. But they, in like her reintroducing herself to a lot of the other people that went to her high school, they kind of revealed that like she was actually a really shitty person the whole time, and like she was just making a lot of comments under her breath that she assumed no one heard, but actually were really devastating to people.
So she was like the sarcastic douche, but she thought that she was like kind of the victim.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Heard a lot of people's feelings in high school.
Yeah, it's like the introvert's idea of themselves that they're, you know, the better person because they're not like... you know, slack-jawed yokel.
Socially competent.
Right, yeah. Right. But yeah, in reality, they're just an asshole who doesn't get it, but is too far up their own butt to, like, try and change their ways. So anyway...
So Ghost World is the non-self-aware version of that?
Yeah, exactly. And like we were saying, it's the characters like that manic pixie trope.
Dream Girl, yeah.
Yeah, and it's written by, you know, an older white guy, and it just kind of... I don't know. That just really annoys me. It's like, this is just this guy who was probably a nerd in high school. I'm going to rip into this guy right now. Writing this character and making it out to be that she is the one that gets it and like no one else in the world gets it. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm just like totally not understanding the movie and it was like all satire, but that's just how it came across to me.
Do you think part of it is that it's about a girl, and if it was about, like, a young guy, you'd be like, yeah, that guy was kind of like that back then, too, and so I can identify with this?
I mean, but then we're talking about Scott Pilgrim. That's kind of the similar thing, right? But even more glorified?
Yeah. Fucking so, Scott Pilgrim.
I mean, definitely, I'll say I would connect to a male character more than a female character, because maybe a podcast listeners don't know, but I am a male.
Oh, well, they know, because this is the Hard Men to Please, and only males are allowed to report on this.
Yeah, only men are allowed to strive for pleasure.
We have a lot of celebrity guests. We have a lot of celebrity guests on this podcast, and whenever a female actress comes on, we say, hey, can you send your husband instead? I know that he's an accountant, but he can tell us.
Like, sorry, Gwyneth Paltrow, I want your weird, homely-looking husband instead.
Isn't she married to Chris Martin of Coldplay?
Wait, who's the other one then? I was thinking the other one.
Oh, Chris, the woman from Mad Men, Christina Hendricks.
No, well, her husband's great too.
She's married to the Snosberry guy. Yeah,
yeah, he's great. Luckiest man alive. Anyway, so that was kind of my biggest problem with it. It was just one of those.
Hey, they're remaking or not remaking? They're doing a sequel to Super Troopers. You think Snosberry Kid is going to come back?
They think that, or are you asking me if I think that?
They are. Remake? Not they're doing a sequel to it. I'm doing a lightning round question. Do you think Snosberry Kid's coming back for the sequel?
I'm gonna put on wax that yes, he is.
Oh, Snosberry Man, that could be sad. This whole movie could be really sad.
It's gonna be very bad, but that's fine.
Anyway, so you had a thought, and it was just starting off, and then I jumped.
Yeah, in. I was really about to hit it out of the park, and now I don't even know where the park is.
Yeah, I can't remember what you're saying.
I mean, just the kind of movie it is. Like, you get what I'm talking about, right? Or am I just rambling?
Oh,
like,
yeah. No. You're talking, I mean, this is the kind of movie that typically, well, what you're describing sounds to me like it's one of those, the writer and the director are also the star of the movie. And so they're like one of those extremely, you know, it doesn't have to make sense to anyone else because I wrote it and I'm directing it and I'm the star, you know?
Yeah, the writer.
Obviously, that's not the case here, but.
Well, the writer of the comic book was also a writer on the movie, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, that's fine,
I think it was him, like, kind of protecting his concept here of this girl that I'm sure he masturbated to in his drink, in his dark days.
Yeah.
It's just so, I don't know, it's frustrating to me because, like, movies like that are the kind of movie you would show to somebody and they'd be like, oh, I hate movies. This is so pretentious.
I never want to see another movie again. Is this what they're about?
It's just not fun. And the only saving grace of the entire movie is Steve Buscemi, isn't it?
Oh, that's the only name you could have said. And I'd be like, well, it can't be total dog shit.
Yeah, I mean, so Steve Buscemi's in it, and how he's introduced, he puts... The two girls are hanging out, just, like, doing their bullshit, and... they are in the room and they find what do you call those? Not wanted ads, but like man seeking woman ads in the paper.
Yeah, like classified.
Missed opportunity.
Oh, okay.
So Steve Buscemi put in an ad because he met a girl on a train or something and it was like, oh, we had a moment. So they call him and pretend to be that woman and set up a date at this like 50s style diner that they ironically like.
Fucking hijinks.
And he shows up, and of course the girl doesn't show up, so he gets really sad. But then the Thora Birch character kind of becomes obsessed with him.
Because he's so fucking weird looking?
Because he's so weird and so sad, and she's an artist. And they run into him again, and then she like strikes up a friendship with him. So he's predominantly in the movie, and the only saving grace, as I said. But anyway, they become friends. They end up banging.
I was going to say that as a joke.
Banging.
But that's really fucked up.
Yeah, it is weird because...
banging.
I don't know if you heard that. Yeah, it's just... I don't even know what to talk about. But so she's kind of like... becomes his friend mostly because she feels bad for being an asshole to him. But then the entire friendship...
pity bang.
Yeah, until they bang. But like their friendship... is pretty much, she's an awful friend, is what I'll say. Because she like wants him to be happy.
This movie really got in your craw, man.
It's just the character. It's just really annoying to watch a movie where the lead character is so obviously like the worst person in the entire movie. But
well, do they like learn a lesson? Because that's what Bridesmaids was like, right? Where she was the problem, and then she had to make up for it and learn the different, you know. To not, or as we've learned on our friend of the podcast, the other podcast, Asterixar, going through Pixar movies, Woody was the dick in Toy Story.
Yeah, solid podcast. I would check it out definitely.
That's a good fucking one if you fucking love rambling.
Yeah, that's a good ramble one. Speaking of which, I'm rambling a lot. This was supposed to be
we got to get some Led Zeppelin in here.
Ramble on. Ultimately, for my interpretation, no one learned a lesson other than Steve Buscemi, I guess.
He learned he could get some young poon by acting pathetic.
So she's a terrible friend to him the whole time. He ends up meeting the girl that he put the ad out for, and then she gets jealous, and they have sex, and then Steve Buscemi leaves his girlfriend for Thora Birch.
Wait, he has a girlfriend and a missed opportunity, and he's banging, like, a college student?
No, sorry.
He's a Kevorka man.
My bad. The missed opportunity girl becomes his girlfriend.
And, oh, okay. Well, geez. Well done.
Yeah. So he starts becoming, like, kind of like a normal guy, because he's portrayed as, like, a super loser who just, like, creates or collects vinyl records and stuff.
Who would do that in 2001? What a wacky time when to be an oddball recluse, all you had to do was collect vinyl and read comics. You ever heard about this band, Weezer?
I think I saw them on Rock
Band. Your life.
So she gets jealous. He breaks up with his girlfriend for her. And then it's revealed how they first met. That was kind of, you know, a goof that she was just, like, ripping on him. So he gets angry at her, but she shows that the whole time she was, like, actually interested in him because she drew comics of him in her journal.
Okay.
And so he was like,
why are you telling
me
the whole plot of this movie, though?
Well, because I don't know. I wanted to go on. I'm in it. I'm in the zone now.
You're deep in the zone, dude.
I don't know how to explain a movie without explaining the entire movie.
Everything. So just literally explain the whole movie. If you can, take up the same amount of time as the running time of the film.
Yeah, it would go a lot faster if you didn't keep fucking interrupting me. It ends, she doesn't learn a lesson, she runs away on a ghost bus. So, there you go, there's the ghost.
What the fuck's a ghost bus?
I don't want to get into it because I've already wasted too much time.
Is it like a ghost ship? Is it the same company?
See, this is why I have to go into more detail. I have to explain.
Yeah, thanks a lot, asshole. Now I got to see this whole movie that you said it sucks. But it's like a ghost ship, you said?
It's a bus.
You know the weird thing about ghost ship is I don't even know if I've seen that movie or not. I feel like I might have.
It does feel like one of those movies that, you know, it was a big joke if you were alive when it came out, but no one will ever talk about it ever again.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I've seen 13 Ghosts, and I can't tell if I've seen Ghost Ship. That was a fucking terrible movie.
Remember the Ghost Ship in Wind Waker? That was a good Zelda game.
Yeah, I liked the ghost ship. I liked everything about that game on the water, and I didn't like anything about not on the water. And then I think they remade it, and they, like, made it so you don't have to spend as much time on the water. I was like, way to fucking read the game. Figure out what's
that was
working,
like,
here.
Yeah, that was, like, the entire conceit of the game, is that you get to, like, actually explore the ocean, and it was awesome.
Yeah, and you don't know what you're gonna find, and that's, like, ooh, exploring. Fucking incredible that went that way.
So I guess that's the entirety of my rant. I'm gonna entrust you to edit it down to a clean 5 minutes.
A nice tight 5 minute rant, which is just gonna be expletives and ghost bus.
Yeah, I come off as very coherent.
So at the end of the film, does she become a female ghost buster?
Watch it to find out.
Ooh, da 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 da.
No, yeah, put a drop in there.
Is that what that means, to put a? I mean, you're talking like producer lingo.
Is that a
producer? Slow down, P. Diddy.
Man, what a name pull! Of all the producers out there,
He's the one.
What'd you watch?
Again, just one of those situations where I just wanted to watch a movie, because when I watched, I think we went over this, I got a new TV, and I was watching No Country for Gary Oldman. Some of the shots, like most of it was kind of fine, but some of the shots had that weirdly too realistic look. And especially like movement shots, which is makes sense because that's why they have the super high frame rate or whatever, is so that like sports you don't like get stuff blurry. But so like if cars were moving around, it almost looked like a really clean like Pixar, like early Pixar, like Toy Story level, like the car just kind of moves too fluidly. It's like really weird. So that's all background. I don't know why I even said it.
If you want to hear more about Toy Story, check out Asterixar.
Yeah, there you go. If you want to hear more about me and my stupid television, just listen to this podcast again and again, because I'll keep saying the same thing. No, so I wanted to watch a new movie because I somehow changed the settings and I turned that off, and I ended up watching The Big Short, which was about Kevin Smith's shorts.
You sure you didn't want Get Big Shorty?
Get Big Shorty, yeah. Big Shorty's not a bad movie either.
John Travolta's real estate broker?
Yeah. I don't know. No, so I watched The Big Short, which you'd seen a long time ago.
And not a long time ago. Like 2 months ago.
Well, yeah, I guess that movie's not actually that old, so it's not within our normal time range of, you know, being like 4 years out of date.
It's still somewhat relevant.
It is. I watched it, and I thought, you remember it was a previous podcast, we talked about The Wolf of Wall Street and how it seemed like it had been made to intentionally feel like it was almost going off the rails, like just bare, like Scorsese was barely holding it together.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to match DiCaprio's character barely holding it together.
Yeah, and for me, like, there's the scene when the boat capsizes or whatever, and you know, DiCaprio's going through his monologue. Yeah, and he looks out the window, and a plane just explodes, and he says, "Did you see that?" And it's like this weird moment of like suddenly he breaks the fourth wall, and a plane just exploded, and it's just so weird. And I felt like that had a lot of similarity to The Big Short. When I finished watching it, I was kind of like, I immediately was thinking, why didn't this movie win either Best Picture or Best Director? Best Picture went to Spotlight, which I haven't seen, and Best Director went to The Revenant, which I haven't seen, but whose director was the same guy who did Birdman, so.
You gotta see The Revenant. Gotta.
I guess I'll see it. I'll see it. But because the reason was it was really impressive to me how manic Adam McKay made it.
Yeah.
And yet kind of kept it together. And it reminded me almost at times of like a YouTube poop, you know, like those, like the, you know, it's over 9,000 kind of things where people like repeat each other and they cut their lines short and they just, you know, randomly throw random stuff in there.
Yeah. Just very manic and super fast paced.
It's super fast-paced, it's super manic, and it holds it together. And I realized that probably the reason they do that is that it would be difficult to do a movie about how people were buying, you know, mortgage bond credit default swaps and then waiting a few months to see if they would pay off, unless you made it, you know, really off the rails.
Yeah, they even I feel like they even touch on that in the movie. Like, it's a really boring subject, but, like, they're doing their best to make it entertaining.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. I mean, it's a good contrast between the films because, you know, The Wolf of Wall Street also acknowledged that, but it acknowledged it in a way that kind of amplified the main character's dickish personality. So at one point he's talking about everything he's doing and he stops and he's just like, you're not going to understand what I'm talking about anyway. And it's kind of like, fuck you, guy, even though he's correct.
Wait, which movie?
In The Wolf of Wall Street, whereas in...
Oh, yeah.
I think The Big Short has a much more, you know, the mentality of that movie is that, hey, guess what? Nobody understood this. The people who were pushing this stuff didn't really understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intended to be obfuscating because that kind of, there's a whole cottage industry of people whose whole job is just to, you know, detangle this stuff, so it's kind of, it's helpful for it to be as confusing as possible to the layperson. But there's a clip that I want to play that kind of, I think, encapsulates both the good and the bad about the film, and this is where Steve Carell's character, Mark Baum, they go to Las Vegas because, you know, they basically spend the whole movie not sure if they just fuck themselves by buying these credit default swaps, which are basically just betting that the housing market will fail.
Yeah.
And so they go to, like, an investor conference in Las Vegas to basically sniff out what is going on, how much do these guys know, and whether who knows more, you know, is the world fucked, or did they get taken for a ride by Ryan Gosling's smooth-talking banker? So let's play this.
First of all, great show today. You were terrific.
Thank you.
Your big mouth was a revelation.
I appreciate that.
You're worried you and your swaps are getting played? Well, this is an opportunity for you to meet who you're betting against. Try not to get too righteous and listen a little.
Okay, fine. Who is this guy?
And a real solid gold asshole.
I'm a CDO manager.
A CDO manager?
Yeah, they're Harding Advisors.
I didn't realize that there was anything to manage with CDOs.
No. We select the securities that go into the CDO portfolio and monitor the assets. I do most of Merrill Lynch CDOs.
Do you represent the investors or Merrill Lynch?
The investors.
You do?
Yeah.
But Merrill Lynch isn't going to send you any customers unless you put Merrill Lynch's bonds in your CDO.
Good question. Let's just say Merrill and I have a... we have a good relationship.
You have a good relationship with Merrill Lynch.
We've been doing business together for a long time.
And so the CDOs that you create are of the highest quality and the highest value.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. Are you at all concerned about the rising default rates?
I assume no risk for these products myself, Mark.
Okay. So let me get this straight. The bank calls you up. They give you the bonds they want to sell. They give you clients. They give you money to run your business. They give you fat fees for doing so. But you represent the investors? Is that right?
Yeah. But we're not in the Merrill Lynch building.
Okay. Where are
you? We're in New Jersey.
You're 20 minutes away.
Well, 5 E's a helicopter.
Okay.
It's funny, huh?
That's hilarious.
Oh, boy. Your boss is about to explode.
No, he's too curious to explode.
Hold on. Say that again. CDO A has parts of CDO B, and CDO B has parts of CDO A, but then they both get put inside CDO C.
Yeah, that one's called CDO squared. CDO of a CDO. All right? And then there's CDOs made up of the opposite side of the bet you made with the swaps. We call them synthetic CDOs.
What did you say? Synthetic CDOs.
Synthetic CDOs.
That is fucking crazy.
It's not. It's awesome.
His face is starting to boil. He looks like the bad guy from Doom.
All right, let's say you have a pool of $50 million in subprime loans. How much money could be out there betting on it in your synthetic CDOs and swaps right now, tonight?
Is it $50 million? $1 billion.
What?
If the mortgage bonds that Michael Burry discovered were the match.
How much bigger is the market for insuring mortgage bonds than actual mortgages?
About 20 times.
If the mortgage bonds were the match, and the CDOs were the kerosene-soaked rags, then the synthetic CDO was the atomic bomb with the drunk president holding his finger over the button. It was at that moment, in that dumb restaurant, with that stupid look on his face, that Mark Baum realized the whole world economy might collapse. And I know what you're thinking. What the fuck is a synthetic CDO?
Okay, so for me, this clip is super emblematic of the movie because it kind of gives you a good sense of a couple of things. One, you have that kind of YouTube poop quality. You see, you know, they cut back and forth, which is not too weird to cut around the restaurant to get a sense of the, you know, the chaos that this guy is kind of rising tension. Mm-hmm. But even in the sense that, you know, Ryan Gosling begins his narration and then stops it. He says, you know, if what the fuck did he say? If CDOs were the match or whatever. And then he stops it and they talk a little more. And then he resumes that narration, repeats that line, like as if he was interrupted by the movie.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a couple of these like kind of postmodern kind of things that kind of shake up the movie. And to be honest, when I watched this, because there are clips of this movie on YouTube that are cut down for time. So they kind of splice things together and cut lines short. And so I had to look it back up on Netflix to make sure and watch them together, the YouTube version and the Netflix version, to make sure that these were actually accurate clips, because that seemed like an editing mistake. And at one point, Steve Carell says what to him, but his question of what is cut off, and it's cut off when he says what, and he then says his next line instead. And so it has that almost, you know, it seems like editing mistakes gone into it. And then of course, you know, thematically, it just kind of shows that this, CDO manager is a total fucking asshole, is super confident about what he's doing, is kind of almost bragging about he's putting up the most minute of fig leaves about the corruption going on. He says, oh, we're not in the mural building. And yet is bragging about the fact that he takes a helicopter to the building probably every day.
Yeah, the helicopter line's great.
Yeah, and then, I mean, this clip actually ends with him, you know, trying to measure dicks with Steve Carell's character saying that, ooh, society apparently values me very highly because he gets paid a lot to do right. This stupid bullshit that's about to tank everybody. But the downside of it, too, for me, when I was thinking about the movie, I was like, why didn't it win Best Picture? Again, I haven't seen Spotlight, you know, maybe it's better, but I really like that this movie seems like it's pushing the boundaries of how to tell a story. But what I realize is I don't think the acting is very good in the movie. And so,
oh, it's weird you say that. But continue.
Okay, yeah, we might disagree with this. But for instance, they have this line, and it always is interesting to me when a movie script makes a comment that demands an action. Because if that action isn't there, it's really apparent. So for instance, in the scene, you know, Ryan Gosling and all the rest of Steve Carell's group are all hanging out at a table where they have a good view of Steve Carell because they kind of, you know, they're hanging back, but they're also kind of checking in. And Ryan Gosling says, oh, your boss is about to blow. And you cut to Steve Carell, and he really doesn't look like he's about to blow. He looks like he's kind of sad, and maybe he's about to cry. but, you know, I'm thinking if you think about, like, you know, the first Mission Impossible, like just before Tom Cruise puts the gum on the aquarium, he looks like a guy who's about to blow. And he's pretty good at that. Just the kind of the watery eyes, but like he looks like he's gonna punch somebody.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is the best.
Yeah,
we need to get that into every podcast we do. But yeah,
just getting it on the record. Tom Cruise is awesome. But I don't feel like Steve Carell played. So again, that's, you know, basically one of the characters is calling out the shot. You know, cut to Steve Carell not looking like he's about to blow. And yeah. To me, I feel like Steve Carell's whole, I don't think it's bad acting. I think he just made a bad call on how to play the character. And because he plays the character like a pretty submissive guy who looks like he's kind of hand-wringing through the whole movie about, oh, this is really so bad what these guys are doing. And even in this scene, you know, after the guy says, ooh, society values me very well, you know, he has his fuck-off line, which is he says something like, you're an incredibly big piece of shit. Which is a line you could probably do a lot with. It's not a great line, but he plays it really weakly. He really, like, underarms it.
Yeah.
And to me, I feel like, you know, this character, the whole time I felt like they should have cast Paul Giamatti, because I feel like he's the kind of misanthrope who, you know, really would bring maybe more of the intensity to it.
Paul Giamatti was supposed to be the Steve Carell role?
No, I'm saying that.
Oh, you would have cast Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, I feel like Paul Giamatti should have been this guy, or someone in that vein. Basically, someone who you could see is like kind of angry all the time, you know, constantly his mind's churning. He's kind of always itchy, you know.
Yeah, I mean it is funny that you. So you said that you didn't like the acting. But it does sound like you just mainly didn't like Steve Carell's acting.
No, it wasn't just Steve Carell, but go on.
Oh, well, I was going to say, like, watching that clip, and you mentioned that there's YouTube edits that, I guess, condense the movie a little bit. I was thinking while watching that clip, like, I would watch this movie again, but if they could almost edit out all the, like, instructional part about the actual crisis, because I do actually really enjoy all the acting and the writing, except for Steve Carell.
So you actually thought Steve Carell was a weak point too?
Totally.
I thought you were going to come in with fisticuffs.
No. I mean, I'll agree with you on that point. Because Steve Carell, I mean, I feel like the big mistake is doing that weird Cookie Monster voice.
He did, well, you know what and, worries me is the idea that he might have done that whiny voice because he's playing a Jew. And so he thought he had to like Jew it up a bit with like a little more of like a neurosis based kind of, so that I hope that's not why, but I did listen for clips of this guy and he's not like just doing a straight impression of the guy.
Oh, so the guy doesn't sound like that?
No, he doesn't. And so he kind of did this kind of his own. And that's why I'm saying it's a little weird. So anyway, you said A, Cookie Monster, what's your B?
Well, I was going to say, like, even if the guy does sound exactly like that and it's like a perfect impression, like, you got to leave that out. It's like way too distracting.
Yeah.
That scene didn't really show it as much, but there were other scenes where I remember it was just like, I can't, like, listen to him. It just is so ridiculous sounding. He just feels like in this movie, he's like the one actor who's like really trying to act. And, you know.
And you can see it.
Yeah, you can see it. And he's trying. And I haven't seen Foxcatcher, which I guess is another big like dramatic role. Mm-hmm. But I didn't hear great reviews about him in it. So I'm guessing it's kind of a similar scenario. But. Like, I was talking to you while we were watching the clip, but like, Ryan Gosling is just, like, so that character.
Ryan Gosling, I would say, is out of the principal actors, he's, I think, the best one. Well, out of all the actors who I recognized, because there's a bunch of groups. There's Steve Carell's group, there's Ryan Gosling, there's Christian Bale, and then there's the guys who I actually don't know who they are. The young guys who are with Brad Pitt.
I thought everyone was great. Brad Pitt actually kind of
I thought
weak
the young
too.
Guys, John Magaro is the one with glasses. I thought he was really good. The young guys were good. I thought Brad Pitt was pointless, and I think that it was. Yeah, I was pissed off at Brad Pitt in 12 Years a Slave because he produced the movie and then he cast himself as the like moral high ground character.
Yeah.
And he same thing for this movie. He produced it, and then he cast himself as the moral high ground character. And both characters are extremely small roles that demand to be going not to one of the world's biggest movie stars because it's distracting. You know,
yeah,
we keep talking about New Country for Old Men because of me, I think. But if you watch that movie has amazing performances in its bit characters. You know, the guy who does the coin toss with Anton Chigurh, the woman who refuses to give Chigurh any information about the where Llewellyn Moss is, the old man in the wheelchair who Tommy Lee Jones meets up with late in the movie. I mean, they're all like superb, and I don't know why I don't know any of those actors because they're extremely good. Well, I'm just saying, in this movie, I feel like Brad Pitt's character, they could have given to almost anyone, but instead they gave it to one of the world's biggest movie stars, and as a result, in order to, you know, disappear, he has to turn everything down so much that he, you know, almost doesn't factor in the movie, and it's distracting, even though he does turn it down so much, but because he's turned it down so much, it's not a good performance.
Yeah, there's just, it's funny, because... You know, like we were talking last time about Warriors, how, you know, kind of more of a B movie because none of the actors are names, and that helps.
Yeah, it's a blessing to have no named actors in it.
Right, because it helps you get lost in the characters, or the actors get lost in the characters. But, I mean, yeah, I would say Steve Carell more so than Brad Pitt, but both of them I think were the two weakest points there because they both just kind of didn't feel natural. Like, everyone else feels natural. Christian Bale... I kind of wish his character had more screen time, even though I don't know if he had really much more to say. But
He was the number one character in terms of people who, I mean, I was amazed that he came up with the idea to short the market so early and then set about doing it, because I was like, what's the rest of the movie about? And for his character, there's really not much else. He gets chewed out by his boss, and you can see he has kind of a downward spiral, and his scenes are all good at, like, upping the stress of... whether it won't turn out or not.
His character almost reminded me of, like, in Warriors or Do the Right Thing, the radio DJ, where you just kind of check back into them because they're the ones that's kind of pushing along the main storyline, I guess.
Yeah, he's kind of the mile marker.
The mile marker, yeah. And then the other characters are, like, the ones that are actually in it, so you can experience it with them. But they're, like, yeah. more of the
omniscient character. He does have kind of a godlike position in this.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I would say him, I didn't think he had a good performance either. And I was actually, when I was watching it, it was funny. I was like, yeah, I can't, you know, I'm watching Christian Bale here. I'm watching him act. I think what he did, I think he did his research, right? He seemed to put a lot more effort into appearing to do like the body mannerisms of someone who had a deleted scene shows that his character, much like the real life person, has a child with Asperger's. And yeah. in researching it, due to that, realizes that he also probably has it.
Hmm.
So he seemed like he was kind of, you know, adopting the body language of someone who's kind of always uneasy, kind of like a restless child, to kind of, you know, show that side of him. But I thought the rest of it, I mean, he kind of similar to Pitt, dialed it down so much that, I mean, he's just sounds like sleepy and bored through the whole movie. And I guess the way I feel about it is, it almost seems like, you know, him and Carell didn't know how to play somebody whose whole life is numbers and assume that they must be like really submissive nerds. Christian Bale's character, or the person he's playing, Michael, Dr. Michael J. Barry, he's not doing an impression of him. He sounds nothing like that. In fact, he sounds more like Steve Carell. And I thought maybe the reason he shied away from doing a straight impression of him was either because it's, you know, lazy, or because, he sounds almost like a hacky comedian doing like a gay voice.
the real guy's voice?
Yeah, he has kind of a high childlike voice.
You go.
No. I don't criticize him for not playing the guy, because actually I would prefer him to think of, you know, based on the script. The script isn't history, it's the script. Yeah. And so he should think based on the script, what should this character be like? But to me, you know, he kind of faded into the background. I mean, every scene he's in, he's not really the interesting part of it, and his character has very little to do anyway. You know, he is just kind of sitting around waiting for this thing to either, you know, work out or not work out. And he's just kind of like, I mean, he honestly sounds like a smarter version of his character from The Fighter, who's a crackhead, who's also kind of like dopey and, you know, not sleepy, but just kind of like almost like a burnout.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if maybe just those characters and the interactions with the other people that they are forced to be with, but like the two younger guys, I think, are great. And maybe just in contrast to them, Brad Pitt also looks like extra dull and dead. But just like I was saying too, like, Ryan Gosling is like so that character, like possibly in real life too, because he just embodies it so well. That
yeah, maybe.
In contrast, Steve Carell just seems so much like he's acting, in compared to Ryan Gosling, who's just like being that character. And all his little cronies too. I don't know those actors' names, but they were all like perfect in what they were trying to do too. Helps that I don't really know their names, except for the guy that was in Hot Fuzz. Do you recognize that guy?
No, which one?
Oh man, I read his name the other day. One of Steve Carell's cronies. He was one of the Andes in Hot Fuzz, and also the kid in the
The blonde one.
Yeah, short hair. He wasn't the blonde.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the blonde one. Yeah.
I can't think of what that Andy looks like. The other Andy's the one that sticks out to me. Oh no! I can think of him now. Okay.
He's also the kid in Shaun of the Dead that he works at the electronic shop with him.
That can't be all the same guy.
It's the same guy. Trust me, I looked it up.
Okay. No, actually, I thought that if they wanted to do an easy swap, you know, Paul Giamatti came to mind, but I thought the guy Jeremy Strong, who is kind of his real right hand man, the one who's pissed off the whole movie.
The bald guy? Yeah, that guy's great.
Yeah, I thought he could have played Carell's position better, because he did seem like someone who was always ready to have an argument and kind of, you know, he was a slow burn kind of guy. He didn't seem like he had a hair trigger temper, but he certainly was angry all the time.
Oh yeah.
And combative. And I felt like it was so weird that Steve Carell's character seemed like it was written to be very combative and yet wasn't. Christian Bale, I would say I'd rather have seen Jake Gyllenhaal in that role.
No, you're crazy.
No, because I think he'd do a better job of playing someone who is neurotically fixated on one thing, is not good at the social side of things, but isn't a pushover. Again, Christian Bale plays the guy like a pushover.
You just want him to be Donnie Darko?
Well, I mean, even Nightcrawler was kind of similar. I mean,
That guy was a pushover. Like, the character was, he was doing his thing, but he was still, like, beholden to his investors the whole time.
I guess I got very little out of it. It just seemed like he was, again, these are people who are, you know, at the forefront of taking on, you know, the financial industry to do something historic, and I just don't buy that they're really pushovers. I get that they might get pushed over by the type of, you know, utter sociopaths that would excel in those fields, but I don't buy that they really would be so, you know, he almost plays it like George Carlin's hippy dippy weatherman. It's just, you know, the guy tells him or that the bubble, no one could see the bubble. And he's like, come on, that's dumb. But yeah, he like almost whispers. To me, it didn't feel like he really found a character. It felt like he was trying to act and wasn't sure how to make it work. And it's funny because I was looking, I was like, I wish he did something like just put glasses on or put like wear like like dye his hair blonde just so I don't see Christian Bale. And then of course Steve Carell comes on, who's even more obviously you know, Steve Carell, and yet he is blonde, so I guess it wouldn't really matter.
Yeah, I know your big thing is hair, changing your hair for a character, but yeah, like you said, Steve Carell is like, I would say Steve Carell is definitely worse than Christian Bale, but also I guess he has a bigger part in the movie. So
yeah, Steve Carell was worse. Ryan Gosling pulls off the weird hair. He kind of has your hair, actually.
What? He's got like slicked back hair. I don't think it's
no, fine. But it's like curly, which is a departure for him.
It is? Oh, okay. I can't.
Yeah, it's dark brown, whereas his hair is usually what, like sandy and straight.
Yeah, and he's got that great
You just want to run your hands through it.
But I think maybe Christian Bale also is helped by the fact that his character has more like noticeable quirks or like things you can pinpoint. In that,
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
He never wears shoes. He listens to metal music. He's wearing like a T-shirt while everyone else is wearing a suit. So it's like easier to for me to maybe put him into a character.
Yeah, and he's got the the glass eye, and he's got the body language of someone who's, you know, kind of twitchy. I think of that though, and I think of like, you know, and they said that when. When's the last time you saw Titanic?
I don't know if I've sat down and watched the entire movie front to back.
Okay.
But the last time I saw the majority, it was probably a couple years.
DiCaprio is fucking awful in that movie. And apparently on the set, he kept trying to get Cameron to agree to give him like the character like a limp or something. Or some type of thing that he could kind of do. And James Cameron was like, I'm not giving you a crutch. You're playing an all-American dream boy. That's the character. Play it. And
good on him.
Yeah, but I think of that in terms of like guys like Christian Bale, who I think they do a lot of studying. They do want to get into the character, but I think that they also do want, kind of like De Niro did, where he would spend time with the character he's playing, and he would figure out, like he figured out in, it was Casino or Goodfellas. Like, it must have been Casino, because I don't think he could talk to Jimmy Burke for Goodfellas research. But he would find out how the guy held a cigarette, and it's like all these little things to create the character. And I think that that can be very useful, but I think it also can be a crutch. And so if you're spending all your time thinking about, you know, how the guy's moving and how he looks and whatnot, I think, I feel like he just kind of forgot to give the guy a voice and to, how is he going to talk that is different from, you know, a bored, Christian Bale. And I think that a character has so little to do, it was not a good decision to also make him so low energy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess. I just love Christian Bale. I'll be honest.
I like Christian Bale too. I really do.
But I like Brad Pitt and like Steve Carell. Of course, they're great. But Really just bad choices, I think.
The thing that's frustrating is Brad Pitt is pretty good, and he can play a lot of different characters, so it really pissed me off that he's taking these roles that should be going to, like, either character actors or, like, no-namers or whatever.
But like you were said earlier, I think him trying to be the moral high ground is the problem. I mean, some of the best roles I can think of, he is not that. He is, like, Snatch or Seven or what else? He's another good movie.
Glorious Bastards, he plays a fun character. Glorious
Bastards. Yeah, I mean, he can do characters, but I think he does really well at being kind of a bad character in a way.
Yeah, having some kind of just not being... I think that might be why Steve Carell was bad at it, because I think he felt the pressure to be the guy who would sit there and wring his hands over, you know, mom and pop losing the farm based on the economy. And so instead of playing a bulldog, which is how the character seems like he's written, it's certainly how he's described.
Yeah.
And which would have made it so much more cathartic when he has his breakthrough about why his stress is so high and how he blames himself. It feels like it was a missed opportunity, just a bad decision. So I guess that's why, that's kind of been sticking in my craw lately, and I've been watching clips of the movie, and I like clips of the movie. And I think that they're quite good at kind of just hammering home a lot of the same themes about just, I mean, they're really hit from every angle, just how insane this is. Even little moments like the young guy who's meeting with his brother's ex-girlfriend who works for the SEC. And she just kind of like laughs about the idea that they're even looking into fraud or looking into like anything regarding the subprime mortgage issue. And then she mentions that she's only in Vegas to float her resume to banks because there's no law requiring former SEC employees to have like a break period before working directly for the people they're supposed to be regulating.
Yeah.
And I did like that McKay and, the screenwriters thought to return it. You know, that's the other thing that I liked about that clip is it also does, in addition to just being generally frenetic with all the sounds of the restaurant, and especially the moment that's also kind of fourth wall breaking when the laughter of the restaurant almost seems like a laugh track on the conversation Steve Carell's having.
Yeah. I noticed that. That was good.
But beyond that, it's like, it just kind of reminds you that there are other people in the world besides the people in this movie. And, you know, when they return to the real estate agent who's just trying to do her best in like Southern Florida, and they return to the guy who's been paying his rent and yet whose mortgage was written out in the name of the homeowner's dog and who's not been paying his mortgage, they return to him. And they kind of cut away. They cut back frequently to show like, yeah, even though this is the story of the few people who saw it coming and kind of how they profited off it, it's also a story we all lived through and a story that really affected a lot of people negatively. And so I really appreciate McKay's vision on it, because it could have been a case of, look at these guys, they were smart to see it, why didn't you see it? Or everyone's equally, you know, he could have visited people who were taking on a mortgage and like that they knew they couldn't take or whatever. But instead he puts the focus on like, no, this was really just kind of in a way, a group effort to create this golem that no one had understanding of how to control. No one even understood when it was going out of control. No one even attempted to stop it, because the time they even stopped laughing off the idea that it could destroy the economy, it was too late. And all, even the heroes of the story, all they could really do is profit off of it. They couldn't even stop it themselves.
Yeah.
It kind of has a better, I think, it has a good message, I guess, or a good take on it that would lend itself better to how to avoid this in the future. Or the attitude, it kind of condemns the attitude, and I guess capitalism generally in a way.
Totally.
Rather than, you know, bottle up someone who, I mean, obviously there's the solid gold assholes of the world, but there's not an easy victim to blame, or there's not an easy villain to blame.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the movie taught you anything about the crisis that you didn't already know?
Yeah, especially the little details. I mean, they talk about in the beginning of the movie, they say, yeah, you've got your 6 second soundbite you say, and to make sure you don't sound dumb. which I think I had a decent idea of it. I don't think that my general understanding of it is that much better, but in terms of just the specifics of what different elements of the crisis were, it helped a little. I actually said out loud, fuck, when at the end it showed that the guy who figured out the crisis, Michael Burry, now all he's trading in is water futures, which is terrifying. it certainly made me angry, and it made me especially angry that the fucking Democratic Party didn't nominate Bernie Sanders, because it feels like anybody who would watch this movie and then afterwards would be asked, all right, who do you think should clean up this mess? That's the answer I would think, because the only person who is really speaking of it from that perspective of like, this is an insane carousel that cannot be allowed to keep running.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you ever watched Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, it does well to fully present a problem and then tell you how it's not going to be solved.
Yeah, it's a very well, because I mean there aren't easy solutions, and it's one of those things, you know, in this movie, the one thing they should have said, I mean, you know how sometimes you watch a movie and you think, here's what you could have said, character, to get the other person to believe you.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling spends a lot of the movie trying to convince people that he's not bullshitting them about the offer that he's making them, which in his words are, he's like, I'm showing you a house on fire and I'm selling you fire insurance on the house. And everyone thinks it's too good to be true. And it seems like he should just say, hey, listen, you don't believe me. That's the attitude that everyone has, and that's why it's going to happen, because nobody can believe it's happening,
right?
Even with the evidence.
Yeah, it's kind of a common thing in movies and TV, kind of like Stranger Things, when Winona Ryder's like losing her mind.
Oh yeah,
you kind of just have to be like, I know this sounds insane.
Yeah, but you need to put that line in somehow.
Yeah, basically that exact wording.
Yeah. But I like the movie. I tried to get my wife to watch it, but for some reason she hates one of the actors in it. The other, not John Magaro, Finn Wattrick,
who plays the other face.
Young investor.
He's got a big face.
Yeah, with the bigger face and the hair parted down the middle. I don't know what she's got against that guy.
I wonder if it's because of American Horror Story, because that's the only other thing I know he's in. But he's great in that, and he's great in this, so I don't know what her problem is. I mean, he plays like a psychopath in American Horror Story. He's pretty scary.
Well, maybe she doesn't like him for that, yeah. I mean, I could see that.
That could be it, I guess. I would say I would recommend watching the movie if you have a very loose understanding of the market crisis that they're describing, and watch it with someone who has very little concept of what happens, and then enjoy trying to explain it to them for the next 4 hours after you watch the movie.
Is that what you and your wife did?
That's exactly what me and my wife did.
Slamming on the wives this episode.
I mean, she has, you know, basic understanding too, but
she was stunned by Ryan Gosling's charming eyes, and she couldn't think of a damn thing.
I mean, I was mostly charmed.
Yeah, she was like, when is he going to get in the car and start driving again and pick up Carey Mulligan?
Yeah,
she loved that film, right? She loved Drive.
Who doesn't love Drive? Drive's great. Let's talk about that.
No, I know, but I mean, she loved it, like, especially, didn't she?
I mean, I think she loves Ryan Gosling because of Crazy Stupid Love, also starring Steve Carell.
Oh, okay.
Where Ryan Gosling mostly plays the same character he's playing in this movie. But
nice.
He's so good at it. It's like, just do it. It's like
Good. He's becoming. I think that Drive is a terrible performance by him because he doesn't say anything, so you don't get a sense of what he's like, but he's becoming someone who I really enjoy looking forward to seeing in a movie.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of movies where he's not like the same kind of cool collected character, and I can't think of any right now.
It's hard. Maybe The Other Guys with Russell Crowe. He plays kind of a dork who is on the receiving end of a lot of slapstick physical violence.
Yeah, but he's still kind of like the smart-ass guy.
Yeah.
Did you even see
He's got to play like Brad Pitt in a... What's it called? Fuck, seven? I can't think of it. Was the movie with Frances McDormand and John Malkovich and
Burn Clooney? Burn After Reading.
Burn After Reading, yeah, where he just plays a complete dunce.
Yeah, Brad Pitt was so good in that.
Fucking Brad Pitt, yeah. He's just got to pick more movies like that. But let's wrap this up. Wrap this up, B. All right, so that's number eight. That's a wrap on podcast number eight. Check it out at Hard Men to Please on SoundCloud, and check it out Twitter at Hard Men to Please, one word. You can also check out our individual Twitters at Justicide and at Super Rap Attack. Both of them are shuttered, I think. I haven't tweeted in like a month.
Just kind of mine's not shuttered. Fuck you.
Yours is always shuttered.
My shutters are wide open.
Yeah.
I don't even have shutters.
You don't?
No. It's always open. Come on down.
All right.
Come on down to Super Rap Attack Town.
And you can also check out justicide.wordpress.com and superrapattack.wordpress.com. Very conveniently named all our Twitter handles.
That's Brandon, baby.
What? That's
21st Brandon. Century.
For movie reviews, I have a movie review for Big Short that says pretty much everything I just said.
Ooh.
So no need to read it. And keep listening, because whenever we start that website, which... Someone suggested we just name it hardmentoplease.com, but I'm not sure if I'm
going
to do that.
No, it's not going to happen.
Are you going to write for the site?
Yeah, I'll write for the site. I got a great review for Hell or High Water.
All right, cool. Then you'll fucking flex that veto power immediately over the site name.
Yes.
We'll figure out what that's called, hopefully by podcast 10. I think after 10, that was our mile marker for when we wanted to basically take this,
global,
legitimate, I guess. Yeah, take it global. Kind of actually, do a hard announcement.
I didn't know he had that capability.
Well, just I'm not even promoting these on my personal Twitter yet, which is the one that has all the followers, all meaning three digits instead of one, which is how much the Hard Met to Please Twitter has currently.
Give it time.
Yeah. But anyway, so hopefully by 10, which should be in 2 weeks, we'll set up a website. We'll host all this stuff there. And then, from there, it's straight to the moon, baby.
Boom, baby. Oh, I can't wait to get to the moon.
Yeah. All right. Love you, listener.
Love you so much.